Welcome to this ISB podcast on the latest ISB meeting that started on the 20th of March. I'm Sonia Lado, the Stakeholder Programs Manager of the IFRS Foundation, and I'm sitting here with Stephen Cooper, ISB board member, and Alan Teixeira, our Senior Technical Director, and they will update us on the key decisions of this latest board meeting. And let's start off with Stephen. Stephen, there was one joint meeting with the FASB on insurance, so maybe you can update us on these meetings.
Okay, thanks, Sonia. Yes, we had a joint meeting with the FASB on insurance. We actually had a separate ISB-only session on insurance as well, which I'll start off with. That separate session covered OCI and the potential use of OCI for certain gains and losses arising from insurance contracts. The joint sessions then covered unit of account and the separation of investment components in insurance contracts. Let me start off with OCI. The exposure draft that we issued on insurance proposed that all gains and losses arising from insurance contracts would be reported in the income statement. However, many constituents have suggested that perhaps that could be inappropriate in that you get short-term volatility accounting mismatches perhaps reported in net income, and many have suggested that maybe we should use OCI for certain elements of those gains and losses, most particularly where the discount rate changes related to insurance contracts should be reported in OCI. Now, obviously, this is closely tied in with the work that we're doing on classification and measurement. And in fact, one of the reasons why we announced that we would reopen IFRS 9 was for exactly this issue, whether we should consider having a category of financial assets where certain gains and losses would be reported in OCI, and that would link in then with certain gains and losses on insurance liabilities being reported in OCI. Well, at this session, it was an education session. The staff were bringing some preliminary analysis and thoughts on OCI. We had a good discussion on that, but this will be followed up with further sessions at future meetings. No decisions clearly were taken at this session. So moving on to the joint meetings with the FASB, the first part of this covered unit of account. Now, this is to do with two issues. One is an onerous contract test. This is for the building block approach, but when an insurance contract is initially recognized, the onerous contract test has to be performed at that point. And then secondly, for the release of the residual margin. Now, in both cases, one could do both of these things at the individual contract level, but that's perhaps not really feasible in practice, and therefore there has to be an appropriate way of grouping contracts into portfolios for the purpose of doing both of these tests. So the ISB decided that for the purpose of determining an onerous contract test, we should group contracts which are based upon similar risks and managed together as a single pool. The ISB decided that for the purpose of releasing the residual margin, we wouldn't prescribe a unit of account, but we should rely on the principle that the residual margin should be released in a manner consistent with the recognition over the coverage period on the basis of the pattern of the supply of services. So that's what the ISB supported. The FASB had a slight difference of view on this. Effectively, what they decided was a very similar approach, but they had a slight variation in that they wanted perhaps more of a prescribed approach to releasing the residual margin, and have said that a similar definition of a portfolio should be applied to both the release of the residual margin and the onerous contract test, and that definition was slightly more detailed than the IASB's. You can read in an update the exact words of the two definitions if people are interested. And then finally, we went on to separation of investment components from the insurance contract. Now, there are two aspects of this. One is whether we should separate investment components for the purpose of measuring those investment components under our financial instruments literature. Secondly, there's the issue of separation from the point of view of presentation within the statement of comprehensive income, statement of financial position, even if we decide that we would measure those investment components consistent with the insurance contract liability. So this, what we were looking at was based upon the assumption that we wouldn't have extensive unbundling of investment components. We left open the possibility that we would have some where these investment components are clearly distinct, and staff are going to do some more work on that. But outside that, we were working on the assumption that we wouldn't unbundle for measurement purposes, and the staff gave a long detailed analysis as to why that is perhaps most appropriate. So what we were really discussing was whether we should disaggregate these investment components for presentation purposes. And we decided that we should, and that in the statement of comprehensive income, we should exclude from premium income those amounts which relate to cash which is going to be paid to policyholders regardless of whether an insured event occurs. We decided in the statement of the financial position that we wouldn't separate, that we would just have the single liability, but there would be some disclosures of what those investment components might be. And in fact, we've got two possible disclosures which are listed, and again, you can read those in update. So we made some progress on that. What we have yet to finalize on this, because we've yet to come back on the wider issue of presentation and exactly how premiums should be presented within the statement of comprehensive income in the building block approach, and that very much ties in with this idea of separation. Mm-hmm. So the whole issue will be revisited in the context of that wider discussion on presentation.
Do we know already when insurance is presenting again to the board, or is that not clear yet?
Yep, the next meeting, I think that's the 23rd of April. Get the date right, but it's about the 20th of April, thereabouts,
yeah,
in that
fantastic
week.
Well, Alan, that let me hand over to you. This was a slightly shorter meeting than usual because it was quite soon after our February board meeting, but maybe you can tell us what else was discussed by the board.
Sure, thanks, Sonia. There actually weren't any other technical decisions made this time. We had two other technical related subjects. One was macro hedge accounting, but it was an education session. We had a look at three papers in that. One was to have a look at what sort of information you would need to help understand the valuation of the risk position when you've got, when it's based on a common risk management approach for interest rate risk. A second one was to have a look at how a net valuation approach for macro hedging could be applied to call demand deposits. And yeah, exactly, it's, these are quite technical papers. And, of course, and the third one was having a look at what sort of practices there are for setting transfer prices and what sort of implications for using transfer prices and revaluing my hedge interest rate position for accounting purposes could be used. So didn't make any decisions, but again, it's about building up the board's knowledge based on this and building up the models. And at the moment, we're still looking. I think it's likely that the second half of this year we'll be putting a discussion paper out on this as a first due process document.
Okay.
We did also discuss effective dates and transition, which is our standard IAS 8. The standard, essentially, a couple of things we had a look at is what happens if we produce a new standard and it's not yet effective. Mm-hmm. What information should an entity be required to disclose about, you know, what's pending or coming up? And at the moment, particularly with a long lead time with some standards, there's uncertainty about what sort of information you need to provide to the market. So we were looking at that more generally anyway, and about some drafting issues within the existing standard that I think create a bit of uncertainty for some about what information is actually helpful, and in fact whether we even need the requirement in there. The other is what happens when you do have a change in accounting policy. We've given some information from practice that that it's being interpreted very restrictively by restrictive. It's not restricting what information you do disclose, but people have been told they have to disclose a lot of information about what the effects of a new accounting policy are, and we're having a look at those. But we didn't make any decisions. The staff have got some more analysis to do, and they're likely to bring that back in either April or May. The other two things are more related about where we're heading in terms of our work plan, and mm-hmm. kind of related to this three-year agenda consultation we're we undertaking. One was a wrap-up of from the board's perspective of the Interpretations Committee It was reviewed in 2010, and we spent 2011 working through the comments we'd received, working with the committee to identify ways that we can change the way they operate to make them more effective and more efficient. Some of the things that we looked at is the way they deal with rejection notices, for example, and making sure that they're not overused. I think you'll find the Interpretations Committee is going to be more responsive in the future. Mm. And so essentially there was a report, and people have a look at the paper presented to our board. The follow-up from that is our trustees will have a look at this as hopefully a last look is in April, and then the trustees will actually produce the final report. And the other one, it's a new process that we've introduced, is post-implementation reviews. And this is just a brief update for the board about the review of IFRS 8, which is our operating segment standard, mm-hmm. And having a look to see the process. It's our first one, so we're taking a cautious approach. But what the board is supporting is a process where we will, in the next quarter, produce what we call a request for views or request for information or anything else. We're looking for evidence on what has happened now that IFRS 8 has been effective for a couple of years. So we want to learn about the standard and understand its what issues there have been for preparers and for users, and we'll use that information, which will be public process, to prepare a report on anything that the board perhaps wants to do in relation to the standard, or in fact whether or not it's comfortable with the outcomes.
Right, wow, sounds very interesting. So that wraps up, I suppose, the board's meeting. Is there anything else that we should mention in this podcast?
Just coming up, I guess, next week, so this is the last week in March. We've got some board members, including the chair and vice chair, are in Malaysia. There's a regional policy forum on Monday and Tuesday mm-hmm. that week. On the Wednesday, there's an IFRS conference in Kuala Lumpur, an all-day event. Mm-hmm. And then the 2 days after that is a group that used to be called National Standard Setters. It's now renamed itself the International Forum of Accounting Standard Setters, or IFAS. And they're meeting for 2 days in the last week, again in Kuala Lumpur. So we're busy and active with that. And then following the Easter recess for some, the trustees are meeting here in London.
Oh yes, that's important. Great. Well, thank you very much for that board summary. And just to finish up, the usual disclaimer, the views presented in this podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent the official views of the ISB. For the official board summaries, please refer to the ISB update on the website. Thank you very much and goodbye.